Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Mass destruction, nuclear and chemical, an alarming beginning to this hour. Reports from Japan's damaged nuclear complex at Fukushima and reports from Syria in just a moment. We'll take you to Florida later this hour to see the changes at work in the aftermath of the Supreme Court decision on the Voting Rights Act this June. Also, a remarkable story of a man who admits that aggressive policing might have kept him from being shot 5 years ago, but he has a surprising view of the value of so-called stop-and-frisk tactics in law enforcement. We'll also do a little city politics, bi-coastal city politics in New York and San Diego. But first to Syria. There has been, within the last 24 hours, an aggressive chemical warfare attack, perhaps around the city of Damascus, targeting civilians. That's the question. A UN inspection team in Syria is looking at that today, along with international journalists attempting to decipher video evidence of an atrocity in Syria. Syrian opposition forces are accusing the Syrian government of using rockets carrying poisonous gas. The Syrian government has denied chemical weapons were used. Ben Hubbard is Middle East correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. He joins us now from Beirut. Ben, welcome.
Thank you.
So what do we know and what are the sources for the information here on these very, very alarming developments in Syria?
Well, we basically woke up early this morning, or in my case, we're woken up very early this morning by lots and lots of reports. There had been a large-scale attack on some of the suburbs east of Damascus. This consisted of a lot of mainly amateur video shot by different anti-government activists in the area and also a number of photos. The large picture that emerges from the opposition is that the government fired a number of rockets at a number of the sort of rebel-held areas east of the capital, that these exploded and put out some kind of poison gas, which has ended up killing a large number of people. We have lots and lots of videos coming in from different cities in this area, different suburbs in this area that show everything from field hospitals sort of overwhelmed with people who seem to have difficulty breathing. Some of them have been laid out on floors. And then we've also got other photos and videos of large rooms just full of bodies of people who appear to have suffocated. And what makes a lot of these videos different from what we've seen in other large attacks in Syria is that people don't appear to have any visual wounds. People are not bloody. They don't appear to have nothing that you can really see. And so everybody is saying that this points to sort of a large-scale suffocation. Now, obviously, there's a lot that we don't know here since we're not able to be there and since all of our sources here are very, you know, these are the opposition. These are the people who are fighting to try to get rid of the government of President Bashar al-Assad.
Well, let's take a look at the forensics here. At this point, the scale of casualties is overmatched to the few number of rockets that were reportedly fired, which leads you to believe that there would be some substance that was emitted by those rockets. In terms of the forensics of what actual chemical agent might have been used, if it was an earlier sort of, phosgene kind of agent, suffocation would be the symptoms. If it was a nerve agent, it would be something completely different. And that really remains to be seen from the videos that are coming in.
Well, and I've spoken to some different chemical weapons experts today just to try to figure out from what we can see in the videos what we can try to understand. And the first thing that they say is that just based on videos alone, it's very difficult to figure out exactly what was used. A lot of them seem to think that this doesn't appear to be the use of any of the very, very common chemical weapons of like a sarin gas or a mustard gas. And they said that a lot of the symptoms that we're seeing could even just be from very intense, either intense quantities of a normal crowd control measure, such as a tear gas or something like that. And if it's used in a large enough quantity, and especially in a closed location, this can cause the suffocation and things like that that we're seeing. Or some people have received reports, and these, again, are all unconfirmed because we have very little good information about what's going on inside of the Syrian government. But some people believe that the government has also diluted some of its more traditional chemical agents to use in attacks like this. So at the end of the day, it's going to be very, very hard for us outside of the country to figure out exactly what happened. And even the death toll has become a very difficult thing. I mean, we just have videos and videos and videos and photos of bodies laid out in different places. And, you know, we can try to count the bodies and we can try to figure out, but it's always virtually impossible for us to confirm that these videos or these photos were actually represent the locations that they say they represent.
But, you know, if these videos do really, really wash, you know, do really come up, that we're looking at one of the larger mass killings that we've seen so far in this civil war.
We're talking with Ben Hubbard, Middle East correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Finally, the issue of the incentive on the part of the opposition for this to be confirmed as a chemical attack, in that it perhaps changes the game for the international community. That complicates your evaluation of what you're seeing on the ground. And, of course, we learned today that the designation that Syria right now is the largest battlefield of Islamist, anti-government forces. It's sort of become the Afghanistan of this decade in terms of mercenaries from all over the world.
Yeah, it's a very, very complicated situation. And the thing to watch, I believe, in the coming days is just going to see what the international reaction is to all of this. I mean, the Syrian government has, in various different capacities, denied that anything happened. They've denied that there was any use of chemical weapons in these areas. And they have accused all the media that have reported this of being part of a media war against the government to try to prevent it from what it considers its own war on terror. The government, since the start of this civil war, has sort of denied that there were ever any popular demands for political change and have basically written off the entire opposition as being terrorists. Now, this is obviously much more complicated now because this opposition has – there is a much larger role being played inside of the armed opposition by people that are – either linked to al-Qaeda or inspired by al-Qaeda's ideologies. And they have very different, you know, a lot of these groups, they've become some of the more effective groups on the battlefield. And they, in a lot of ways, appear to be serving their own agendas and not so much fighting with the rest of the rebel forces to just trying to topple the regime. They seem to have a much larger agenda. So all of this is going to make it very complicated. I mean, also complicating this is the fact that we now have a United Nations investigation team in Damascus, just arrived on Sunday. It was supposed to begin working on Monday, that has been sent by the Security Council to investigate, or sent by the United Nations to investigate previous reports that we've had of chemical weapons use in Syria. It's going to be very difficult for the UN to make this kind of a visit unless it's facilitated by the Syrian government. At the same time, not going out to investigate an attack that's this large, or that appears to be this large, that's so close to where they are staying in the Syrian capital, it's going to be a huge blow to their credibility. A lot of the comments that we've seen coming from some of the opposition leadership have already indicated this and said that we were very close to very close to a year from when Obama, President Obama, first said that the use of chemical weapons in Syria was a red line, and that if that line was crossed, it would lead to a stronger American response. And so many people in the opposition have pointed that out and said, well, it appears very clear that that red line didn't actually exist. And that if it did, the government certainly isn't worried anymore about trying to cross it. So these are all sorts of different factors that it's going to be very interesting to see how the international community responds to this, whether it does lead to any increased international involvement in the conflict, whether the UN is going to be able to investigate and try to provide a sort of a more independent assessment of what has happened in some of these areas outside of Damascus.
A recalculation of the situation in Syria by the international community as the bodies are being counted from these latest attacks. Ben Hubbard, Middle East correspondent for our partner, The New York Times, speaking to us from Beirut. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.